Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. On today's Tour Catcher,
Olga Rune captures his maiden Masters title.
Sabalenka stuns Świątek in Texas.
And the Billie Jean King Cup Finals get underway in Glasgow.
Kim, Chris, today is the 7th of November and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We have had our final Masters event of the season on the ATP Tour. A fantastic Holger Rune, a fantastic final even, against Novak Djokovic, coming away with his first ever Masters title. We've also had a stunning upset with Aryna Sabalenka defeating Iga Świątek in the semi-finals in Fort Worth to set up a final, a Monday final with Caroline Garcia. We've got all the finals to come. Billie Jean King Cup finals are underway tomorrow in Glasgow. We've got the next gen finals as well and the ATP end of season finals and also the Davis Cup finals. Finals. But Kim, most importantly for you, the Renaissance is back. I can't believe I'm saying it, but the Renaissance is back.
One win away from the full-on Renaissance. I'm annoyed the final is... Well, A, why is the final on a Monday?
That's
and
wild.
B, it's in the middle of our night, which is slightly annoying. But yeah, I'm not really sure what they thought Texas tennis fans were wanting to do on a Monday in November, but apparently it's go to
day
the
day before Billie Jean King Cup finals. I mean, all those fans and players are going to have to just rush off from one continent to the other.
It's almost like they're trying to make it as hard as possible, right? For them to get there.
Let's just make it really difficult.
But you guys are there, which is the most important thing. You two are in Glasgow.
That is very
Airbnb.
True.
We are. We're
very
here.
Exciting.
We're in Glasgow. We're in separate rooms recording because we can't figure out how to do it in the same
Chris
room.
Chris has chosen like the bougiest Airbnb that I left him to his own devices. I was sort of worried what he was going to pick. But unbelievably, it's turned out quite nice.
It always turns out nicely.
I'm very jealous.
Yes, Kim, next time.
It looks lovely.
Almost too nice for me, I think.
That's a problem. Or maybe...
Have you found...
If Kim was here, it'd be nice enough.
Have you found the fried chicken chops yet, Joel?
I have not yet, but maybe after recording, we might venture out into Glasgow City Centre to see the delights of what Glasgow nightlife can behold before all the tennis kind of gets going tomorrow. But yes, me and Chris are here. We're very excited. Tennis tomorrow. We're gonna be in the thick of it. Media accreditation in the media room. Gonna be asking some questions as well. We've actually been deliberating today, haven't we, Chris, about who do we want to speak to? What are we gonna say? Because there is just so much to talk about, isn't there?
Oh, there's so much to talk about. And I think we might be, and I'm going to try and find this out by speaking to the different people who were there from media, if we're the only people who attended last year's Billie Jean King Cup.
I feel
like that might
massive
give us...
Street
some,
cred there. Massive
exactly,
street cred.
Special statement. Every question I ask will start with...
We were in Prague.
Last year in Prague. Exactly. Just to really make it clear that we are not only media accredited, but we are Billie Jean Cup accredited. And that makes the difference.
There's only been two Billie Jean King Cups, haven't
two
there,
from
I think,
two.
With the new name.
We're part of the legacy of the Billie Jean King Cup finals, which is still, I mean, it's still a massive tongue twister. And I hate saying it every time because it just feels like such a mouthful. But yeah, it's great to be here. I mean, do you know what was quite funny was I landed earlier today and there was like an official, there was a guy with a sign at arrivals that said, you know, official transport for Billie Jean King Cup, but I didn't feel like fancy enough, so I just ended up getting the bus into the centre.
But also, Joel, it did say Iga Świątek on that sign, or Barbora Krejcikova.
Oh, well, a bit hopeful
that was
there,
their lift.
Yes.
Yeah. Could be the new coach. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I'm glad that you're in Glasgow. This whole week is hopefully going to be a highlight for you both. But tell me, we've had a whole week to, you know, discuss, which is why we're here today. Do either of you have any particular highlights from the last week in the world of tennis? Any fun bits that you particularly liked the look or the sound of?
My highlight personally was nothing to do with the events I rattled off a few minutes ago, but it was actually in Shrewsbury, an ITF women's event. Katie Balter was playing, and Katie Balter's partner, Alex de Menor, who I think lost the night before in Paris, decided to take a quick trip, I'm assuming the Eurostar, over the channel, and yeah, went to Shrewsbury to watch Katie Balter play. I feel like he was very kind of undercover. I mean, there weren't many fans there, but it was great to see that little dedication there, just to kind of, you know, put that loss to one side, hop over, and yeah, go and support your partner on tour.
Are you saying he threw the match to support her? Because it sounds like, when did he work out his
travel
schedule?
Yeah, he wanted to be in Shrewsbury. Yeah. I'd much rather be in Shrewsbury than Paris, come on.
What if there was a rail strike, Alex?
Well, exactly. They all got called off, didn't they, the rail strikes. But do you think he would get recognised in like Shrewsbury town centre?
No.
Or
I would say probably not.
I'm just wondering what train he got after he got to like St Pancras. Maybe... Well, I'm not sure. This
is he in Glasgow? He could be in Glasgow. We'll see as we continue to track the movements
of
Alex de Menor.
Maybe, yeah. Well, maybe we need to ask that to Katie Balter. What train did Alex de Menor get to go see you in Shrewsbury?
Keep a focus on women's tennis. That's what we like to see.
Asking the difficult questions. Yeah, we're here to ask.
Shall I tell you what my highlight was?
Please.
I love a challenger and I love ranking points. I spend most of my time on the live ATP race website, and I found this fascinating because I was ready to celebrate Holger Rune's top 10 finish of the year. And then I found out that it actually might not be the case, because after Paris, he only holds a 6-point advantage over Hurkacz, but he has 35 points from the Poe Challenger, where he had a semi-final in 2021. So unless he makes it into the field of ATP finals, it's not going to be the top 10 finish that I was celebrating. Ooh. But I just love the fact when you get Bianca Andreescu at the same thing, when she won the US Open and she still had Challenger points on her record. And the same thing happened to Alcaraz this year. And you just think, when people rise up so quickly, it puts into perspective just how much they've done. But 6 points, I think he needs to play another challenger event if he doesn't make it into the field for the ATP finals. That's my suggestion if you're listening, Holger.
See you at the Ilkley Challenger on the grass court season next
six
year.
6 points, I reckon he can get it there.
Ooh, I thought he was in for I thought that was going to be a bit more home and dry than that. So that's some good number crunching there, Chris. I like that.
With my calculator at present.
That is crazy though, because I was looking at, you know, next gen finals last season, Carlos Alcaraz was the champion, and to think, yeah, skyrocketing, going straight up the rankings to world number one within 12 months, it's just unbelievable. And Holger Rune, challenger to maiden masters title, and seemingly beating anyone in the top 10 in his way.
We love a story like that, don't we? What was your highlight, Kim?
Well, I don't know if it's a highlight, more of a kick in the teeth, perhaps.
That's not a highlight.
Well, you know how we were having a go at Maria Sakkari last week, saying she was just at the the WTA finals for making
she
up the
She took it personally.
She took it personally because she, you know, obviously went through and got to the blooming semi-finals, which, you know, she won all of her group matches, qualified in top place, in the top place of her group. And obviously she lost to Garcia, you know, Renaissance and everything.
Exactly.
But I was, very, very impressed. She obviously thought, you know, I've had enough of them slagging me off on the Tennis Weekly podcast.
You were
here
pretty punchy, you two. I think you said, what was it? Make up the numbers and then predictions for next year. Sakkari should probably make up the numbers next year as well.
Well, I mean, she did have a very good run to the final in Guadalajara, which, you know, it seemed, you know, gave her a bit of confidence, a bit of momentum. I was not expecting her to, not only did she come through her, you know, her round robin, you know, 3-0, but I don't think she dropped a set either. Like, it was all very, very, very comfortable, which to me made it all the more surprising, actually, that she went and lost the semi-final, because I thought she was playing better tennis than Caroline Garcia, who, yeah, for me, wasn't necessarily as routine going through her group as Sakkari. So, yeah, I was, again, a little bit surprised. I feel like there's still some sort of critique or commentary on Sakkari at the business end of tournaments, and that still being a criticism maybe of her, that she doesn't necessarily get it done as often that I think a lot of her fans would like to. But yeah, it was very certainly still very impressive, her coming through the group without dropping a set, going undefeated.
Yeah, and let's look at the final that we do have, because like we were saying, it takes place on a Monday, bizarrely. But we do have a final between Caroline Garcia and Aryna Sabalenka. Now, they have a 2-2 head-to-head. Garcia won their match that they played earlier this year in Cincy. So it's quite close to call, because, yeah, they've both come through. Obviously, Sabalenka beating Iga Świątek in the semi-final, 6-1 in that third set, which was, I guess, quite a surprise. I kind of thought Świątek would just have that in the bag, really, especially considering she's won her last 15 matches against top 10 players. But yeah, Sabalenka's forehand was very much on it, and amazing last set. And she now has become only the third female player to beat the first, second and third seeds at a tournament since the year 2000, because she has beaten Iga Świątek, Ons Jabeur and Jessie Pegula in the last week. But yeah, we've got this matchup between Garcia and Sabalenka. Garcia, one win away from another, you know, massive title for this season. She did get a 1,000 title earlier in the season. She's guaranteed a top four, I think a top four in the world finish, regardless of what happens, which is amazing considering she started the year at 75. I think top four would equal her best previous singles ranking. So, I mean, I'm really pleased for her regardless. But, I mean, who's your money on for this showdown, you know, last match of the season that we've got coming up?
Well, I'm going to have to say Garcia, because I did pick her for the final. And I just think if you can get through the tough matches, like I think she had that 7-6 tiebreak set against Kasatkina in the round robin. If you can get through that and then you start to play well again, it's almost like she's been freed up by that result. And Something about Fort Worth is really doing well with her. She's got her cowboy hat on that she's been wearing. She's fully embraced life over in Texas, and maybe she'll relocate there if she wins the title. But I've been super impressed with her play, and you know, she accepts she's going to miss some balls and she's going to hit big. I think it's a tough one to call. We've seen whoever seems to be doing well then loses. So now that after this form, I mean, it's hard to back up your biggest win of the year. So I think the pressure's on Sabalenka, really, once you've taken out Iga. So Garcia, I will go with, because the pressure is on Sabalenka and Garcia is just living that Renaissance dream.
I think I would agree there. I mean, it's amazing to me.
We never agree.
We were previewing the end of season finals for the WTA, and we were talking about Caroline Garcia and her coach, like, leaving the setup, and it didn't feel like a very good place to be in, which to me makes it all the more impressive she's managed to get through to the final. I mean, she's serving beautifully. She's volleying beautifully as well. And I think if her serve is on form, then I think that's going to really kind of help her, I think, against Sabalenka, who I was impressed against Świątek in terms of it being brought all together. Because although we're talking about Caroline Garcia and this season being, you know, her route back up the rankings, I think even though Sabalenka is in the finals, and yes, she's still a top five player, I still would look at her season as more the opposite, more of a bit of a disappointment. You know, she was, I think we were sort of expecting her to kick on a bit more, maybe even win a Grand Slam trophy, you know, at the start of the season when, you know, she was number two in the world, you know, second seed in big tournaments. And you know, she's got to this final. She's not actually won a trophy this season. So for me, she's just one of these players who's just so, unfortunately at the moment, she's just so erratic and inconsistent. But on her day, when she can bring it together, she's so formidable that even an Iga Świątek can't stop her. She can beat anyone, you know, on a tennis court. And I think for me I think the same, you know, the same questions were being asked this year and they'll be asked next year, is Sabalenka and consistency. That is the thing that she needs to solve, because the match against Świątek, particularly that third set, Świątek just ultimately just, although had a great season, has had, you know, great wins, just didn't have an answer to her power play from the back of the court.
It always begs the question, doesn't it, when you see this? I was just going to say quickly that when you see the different positions where you qualify for the semifinals playing a role, so say, for instance, Iga probably would have beaten Sakkari, do we think? If Sakkari had come through second and Sabalenka had come through top, and you'd have a Garcia-Sabalenka semifinal potentially. So it's one of those ones where your path through, you just have to kind of ride out the storm, don't you?
Yeah, and I think it really does depend. It's quite ironic, really, that Sabalenka hasn't had the best of seasons. I think often that does happen, doesn't it? Someone will peak just at the right time at the end of season finals, even though going into it, they may not have been the one to necessarily pick. I mean, I know we had high hopes for, I think, Jessie Pegula and Coco Gauff, who lost all their matches.
Yeah. Singles and doubles, I think.
9-0 for the Americans at home.
What was going on there? Because that for me was almost the... I know we say anything can happen in the WTA WTA tour, and arguably, you know, this event has proved it in some regards, because I thought this was going to be Iga Świątek and everyone else, and it has very much kind of proved the opposite with, you know, players I thought were maybe making up the numbers, like Maria Sakkari, and I was going to put Sabalenka in that category, you know, doing really, really well. But yeah, adding to that, I was not expecting Pegula and Gauff to perform so poorly. I have heard that Pegula has pulled out of the Billie Jean King Cup. She had a cold, so I think there were kind of physical issues. I don't think she was 100%, so there might be mitigating circumstances, and maybe it just all caught up with her. But it was still very kind of surprising to see, given the level she's displayed certainly in the last few weeks.
Yeah, so we do have a doubles final between Krejcikova and Siniaková against Kudermetova and Mertens. So that will be before the singles final later on tonight. So just quickly, are you both going for Garcia to win, or anyone going for Sabalenka?
I wouldn't go for anyone other than Garcia, Kim. What about you?
Well, I'd love Garcia to win, obviously, but I'm going to go for Sabalenka just because I think she might. I don't want to jinx her. There we go.
Ending on a high. No, I'm going to go Garcia. Garcia in three.
Ooh, I'd love a three-set final. I think we don't get enough of them. I was going to say,
I think it could be tight. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it will be.
Tiebreak.
It'll be edgy. No one's going to serve that out. We're going to see some Sabalenka double faults.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of breaks.
Sure.
Actually, I know you're going to say, Kim, I know you say it was tight. I actually think it could just be like a 6-2, 2-6, 6-2 sort of scoreline. I think it could be all over.
back and forth.
It could be a lot looser.
I was going to say, of the players you mentioned, Kim, in the doubles final, I think three of them are playing the Billie Jean King Cup. So they still haven't played their final, and they're going to have to be here on, what day, Tuesday, when we kick off the action?
Who's chartering that flight?
Oh, the Krejcikova. She must be paying for that. She must have the highest prize money. Czech tennis.
She is the Grand Slam champion.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of them all, in the singles, anyway. Well, they're all Grand Slam champions in doubles, aren't they?
I mean, how do you think the event actually kind of went? Because the start of the week, I mean, it was... five people in attendance. And, you know, seeing on social media around, you know, tickets on resale sites going for $6. And I feel like we had this, like, really... sad plea from Iga Świątek to be like, oh, please come and watch us. Yeah, we deserve better than this. And to be fair, towards the end of the tournament, I think, you know, the attendances did rise, or at least it looked, you know, a lot better on TV. But certainly at the start of the tournament, we were thinking, man, it shows that I feel that, you know, the WTA didn't really publicly advertise this and the players enough to make it feel like an event worth coming to, based on just the lack of people who were there, which feels very much in contrast to what we've seen this week in Paris at the last Masters tournament of the year on the ATP side.
Well, Paris had almost a sellout, 99% of tickets sold, which I think was the beating the previous record that they set at the at Bercy. So decent turnout in Paris, and what a great great tournament, really. Fantastic final, especially the end. Very dramatic, with Holger Rune winning his first Masters title, beating Novak Djokovic in the final, but doing it in such a stylish way across the whole week. He beat 5 top 10 opponents in the space of the week, which no one has ever done before at a Masters 1000 level. Crazy. I mean, he beat Djokovic, Felix Auger-Aliassime, Carlos Alcaraz.
Felix Auger-Aliassime on like a ridiculous win streak as well.
Exactly. And it was straight sets. And I was thinking, okay, maybe Felix is, you know, finally a bit tired. He's, you know, but I think it was just Rune really on this sort of run of form. Who else did he beat? Rublev and also Hubert Hurkacz. So, and Stan Wawrinka in the first round. So, you know,
Stan Wawrinka didn't have particularly nice words to say to him at the net, I don't think.
Oh, that was quite a close match, though.
There were match points saved.
Yeah. Match points, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it could have been very different. But what did you both make of Rune this week? I know, Chris, you called this.
I think this is my time to say that at some point I did say, after seeing him in Stockholm, that I thought that he would be top 5 next year. So I just think it's just such a solid, solid game. So I think, did I think he'd win Paris? No. But the way that he did it, I think no one could have predicted, because it was so uncharacteristic to see Djokovic against such a young player getting the advantage in the final set and then not being able to get it done, or not being able to take those break points when Holger was serving for it at 6-5. It was very strange viewing for anyone who's watched or followed Djokovic's career. It's almost unprecedented.
Was unprecedented. I think it was the first time ever in a Masters final when Djokovic has gone a set up, he's lost the match, which just shows, I think, the quality that Rune was playing at, particularly, you know, at the end. And I think that really kind of revealed to me, you know, the level he's playing at, certainly, but also like a test of character. Because, you know, I think other players would have just kind of, you know, wilted or folded in that situation. And, you know, Djokovic would have broken back and it would have gone to a tie break and you would have, you know, put your money on Djokovic to come through. But the fact that Rune was able to, you know, bat away those 6 break points and then, you know, serve it out, I think to me really shows, you know, regardless of the journey he's gone through to get to the final, for me was a real kind of showing of what he's made of. And given that he's so young, it makes it all the more remarkable to me in terms of what he's doing on a tennis court.
I love how much he wants it. And I think his focus is so clear when he was getting those, when he was saving those break points. It was phenomenal just how much he believed, you know. And I think if you don't believe, you're not able to do that. And I think he really does think that, given the form he's on, and the sky's the limit for him. So I think that's incredible. I'd love to get your opinions on that match against Carlos and what went on in that one, because that was very competitive and he was kind of being outplayed, Carlos, in many ways. And then obviously we had that surprise retirement, which has led to Carlos kind of ending his season.
We've had a couple of odd retirements, haven't we, at like key stages of matches. Think back to Medvedev retire against Novak Djokovic in Kazakhstan. Now we've had this one in Paris. It's all very, like, yeah, it just felt very, very abrupt. I know we've had Alcaraz come out and say he's not going to be at the end of season finals now because of this injury, and he didn't want to aggravate it. But yeah, to me, it was all very strange.
I also feel that since the US Open, obviously, we haven't seen the best of him. He has struggled a bit. So it might be quite a sensible decision just to have the rest of the season off. I mean, we'll get on to the field that has been set for Turin in just a second. But Rune, going back to Rune, is this something you can see him keeping up? Or do you think it was one of those flash in the pan weeks? Bit like Borna Koric had earlier in the season, you know, very different story, very different.
Kim,
kind
how
of
dare you? Borna Koric, flash in the pan.
I'm just saying,
Joel's
people
favorite.
Have their week in the sun. And what do we
I
think?
I could have
do
said that about Pablo Carreño Busta.
Well, yes, you could have done, because he won. what did he win? He won
Montreal?
Rogers Cup.
Rogers Cup, yeah.
Yeah. That's it. But yeah, what do you both think? I know you're quite a fan, Chris, and obviously you've got the Danish aspect. You know, how big Rune is becoming back home in Denmark.
Yeah, I think in terms of the tennis, I don't think this is a flash in the pan at all. I think he, having seen him play in Stockholm, as I've said, I was very, very impressed. It's probably some of the best level I've seen of live tennis in a really long time. And I think the nature of his game, it's a bit different from Carlos in the sense that Carlos's serve is his big weakness. It's not the best first or second serve, and he doesn't get the free points off it. And so you do get longer rallies. He does kind of have to work a bit harder for it. When Holger was getting some serious free points against one of the best returners in the game. And that was the thing that I think makes it most impressive, is that when you have such great technique on the serve, on the backhand especially, and a willingness to move forward if you need to, I think there's enough of the fundamentals there that even on a bad day, he'll hopefully be able to get through some of those matches, a bit like in the Wawrinka match. But in terms of the Danish perspective, everyone has now taken him on as their own. Before, they thought he was maybe a little bit brattish. And now they just think the pride of Denmark. So that is the news from Copenhagen. I can report back.
Yeah, and I think just adding to that, I think, you know, with Muratoglu in his corner, I think he's got a really good setup in terms of, he knows, you know, what he needs to do now. He needs to build on that consistency and prove to everyone that, as you said, this isn't just one week in the year. And I think it was interesting to hear Muratoglu talk about that and talk about the fact that we have to upgrade his average tennis play and to make sure that his normal average play is as excellent as we have seen so far. And I think it's fantastic because it's another player, I think, added into the, you know, into the mix. And, you know, even players like Stefanos Tsitsipas, who I thought had a very good week, also pushed Novak Djokovic in a really high quality, excellent, semi-final. It's just going to make it even more competitive. And I just start to think more and more about kind of the rivalries that could come up. And to add Rune into the picture, I think, yes, he does rub some people up the wrong way. And I think there are going to still be question marks over his maturity. But I don't think you can define him on just that alone. And when you look at the tennis he is able to play on court, the character that he's showed, I think it really, really helps. And the fact that I don't think has any sort of scar tissue that I think like a Tsitsipas has when he comes up against like a big three opponent, arguably helps him because he's not almost kind of facing these kind of inner demons that I feel like some other players do, maybe like a Zverev. So I think that certainly helps. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But it's fascinating to me how we've got these players coming up on the ATP Tour. They're very, very young. And I always think, you know, a few years ago, we always spoke about like on the ATP circuit, it takes a little bit longer than say on the WTA side, where, you know, you can come up at, you know, 17, 18, whatever. But it's amazing to me, you know, we're seeing like 19-year-olds play incredible tennis, defeating, you know, greats of the game like Novak Djokovic. It's for me moving away from that idea that, you've got to have like a few years on the tour, first of all, to bed yourself in and then try and make a name for yourself. Like, I feel like a Tsitsipas and a Zverev have gone down that route. But yeah, I look at players like Holger Rune and think, actually, he's just come onto the scene and announced himself with a big smash.
Are you saying, Joel, therefore, and I would probably agree with you, that current gen just don't have the same talent level as the big three and next gen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can answer that maybe on 1 week of tennis alone, but certainly for me, I think that is going to be an interesting narrative and topic to explore over next season, particularly when we see players like Holger Rune and Felix Auger-Aliassime. And yes, of course, we're all going to be clamoring, and Carlos Alcaraz as well, and we're all going to be clamoring for them to, you know, play players like Djokovic and Nadal. But I'm also equally interested to see, you know, them play players like, yeah, Tsitsipas and Zverev, because I think that could be a consistent talking point throughout next season.
So elsewhere in Paris, I know we saw FAA's streak come to an end very sadly, but we did see Gilles Simon having a bit of a run in his final tournament, which I'm sure you were quite pleased about, Joel. He beat Andy Murray, Taylor Fritz.
That was like his first ever win, I think, against Andy Murray. He's played him like over 20 times and... it was disappointing for Murray because he got into a very good position, a winning position, and wasn't able to close it. But it really was amazing to see Simon play the level he did, especially against Fritz as well. One of the reasons why Paris went on till 3 a.m. post 3 a.m. That day. I always think you're running that risk when you've got six matches on the slowness of the courts that are in Paris. But yeah, great from Simon. Last kind of roll of the dice. But I think he said it. I think he kind of said it best. So I think you could see on the TV, like, as well as he was playing, I think he knew deep down it's like, man, my body just could not sustain this for a whole season. Yes, maybe a couple of matches, but doing this over, 50 weeks of the year, no chance.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why he's calling it quits at the end of the season. Another player who we saw, but not for very long, was Rafa. He lost his opener to Tommy Paul. A bit of a shame. It was 6-1 in that third set. I was watching the first bit of it, and then I did have to go to bed, I'm afraid. But yeah, a close one. It was a tiebreak in the second set. So I wish Rafa had got over the finish line and got some more matches under his belt. But yeah, very slow court and first match back.
Bit of an injury concern?
Yeah, I just never know really with Rafa. There's always something, isn't there? He's had a difficult time of late with
it. It feels strange one to come back for it if he knew he had an injury, like... It was my sort of thinking.
Well, you want to test your level, no, don't you think, Joel? I think it was probably to know before you... I mean, going into the end of season championships and playing all top 10 players, having not had any warm-up events, I think either way, I don't think it's too bad for his prospects. There is obviously the injury doubt. He did say unless something changes, he was going to play. And as Kim said, like if he had got that tie break done, then, you know, that would be... a pretty good result. We'd be having a completely different conversation, but it did look like he did fade in that third set. So that's the only thing that I'd say was kind of a cause for concern, is that it is rare to see him not play a competitive third set.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see about Rafa and see where he's at for Turin. But we do have a confirmed field. So we do have Rafa as the top of that confirmed field now that Alcaraz has pulled out. We've got Tsitsipas, Casper Ruud, Daniel Medvedev, Felix, Ogier Aliassime, Andre Rublev, Novak Djokovic and Taylor Fritz. Holger Rune is the first alternate. So if Rafa or someone else does drop out, then he would get his place, which I think would be really intriguing to see if he can then, you know, keep that form going into the World Tour finals. So, yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. But that is the current field as is. Out of those players, I mean, I've got my eye mostly on... FAA, Djokovic and Medvedev, I think, as potential winners for me.
I would quite like Holger Rune to be in there. Just more because like, then you've got three generations sort of represented, I think, quite equally.
Yeah, we are missing that gen, aren't we? I do agree. But I love the fact, Joel, you're a Holger convert now. Before I thought I was
just the
only
one. He's here to shake it up.
I agree. It would be good to get. I mean, it's a shame, obviously, that Carlos isn't there. But I do think, having seen Felix play as well as he did this year, I think he could be a contender. But I'm not sure. I might go back on him winning it now. I think.
Do you think we'll see Rune? Do you think we'll see Rune in some shape or form playing in Turin?
I think we will. I think it happens a lot more on the men's side that people seem to be all bandaged up and hobbling off the court. And Berrettini last year was very sad that he had to pull out in his first match, and Sinner ended up playing, I think, in that tournament. But I can tell you that I don't think that Rublev or Ruud will get it done. but I think Djokovic.
Are they your making up the numbers, aka players we're going to expect to see in the semifinals?
I'd say make up the numbers on an indoor court, that's for sure.
Right, let's take a quick break now. We'll see who does make up the numbers or not in Turin in due course. But we'll be back in the second half of today's show talking about the next gen finals, which are currently getting underway. The ATP finals Grand Slam rule controversies and also the Billie Jean King Cup finals kicking off in Glasgow, as alluded to earlier. So do not go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And before we get on to all of the various finals that are happening over the coming week, Joel, you've got a par for the courts for me and Chris, very excitingly.
Yes.
Is it themed around one of the various end of season finals?
Billie Jean King Cup 2021 themed, I would take that.
It's not Billie Jean King Cup. No, it's not. It is, though, related to what we had last week. It is a par for the courts back and forth. And last week, you know, it was very good. We had, because it was very good because I won it. It was WTA winners, singles winners of the end of season finals. So naturally I was thinking, could I do the same for the men? But to be honest, I looked at the list and I thought between you two, I thought that was going to be a bit too easy.
I think
easy.
We've done that already, haven't we?
Have we already done that as well? Well, exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Well, it's thought out,
too
Joel,
easy.
Yes.
I feel like you would have aced it.
Is Anna Chakvetadze an answer in this
David
one?
Nalbandian. Do we get points?
No, neither an answer. What I am looking for is, rather than singles, I am looking for doubles players who have won the doubles ATP end of season finals since and including 2010. And I've counted, there are 19 players who have won the doubles.
You don't have to know their partners.
2010. You don't have to know their partner. I'm just looking for one player, and it's going to go back and forth between you two.
Okay.
So if you know a partnership, Kim, there we go. Yeah. If you know
since
a partnership.
2010.
Yes.
Oh, so I can't quote a partnership. I just have to say one player at
just
a time.
Just one player at a time.
Okay.
Yes.
So
okay.
We need to be careful, because if we say a player, it might help the other one, right?
I know. It could do. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, since 2010.
Okay. Excellent.
So goodness. I'm gonna let Chris go first, because I feel like Kim, I think you went first last week, so I'm gonna give Chris the honors this week.
How many are there? But you say?
I think there is 19. If my maths is correct, which it could
since
be,
2010.
It also could
okay.
not be.
Okay.
But yeah, since 2010.
I will start.
Who are you going to kick us off with?
I will go for Mike Bryan.
Okay, well, in that case, I better go for Bob Bryan.
I'll go Jack Sock.
Mark Lopez.
Nicholas Mahou.
Very good. Yes, correct.
Marcel Granollers.
That is a correct answer. Granollers with Lopez. Yes, 2012.
I'll leave Kim to the Spaniards. I'll go for Pierre Huysheber.
Correct. Yes, with Nicolas Mahou. 2021, 2019.
Fernando Verdasco.
Oh, very good, Kim. I thought that was a tricky one, but yes, Fernando Verdasco on the list.
Oh my goodness. Has Wesley done it? I'm going to say Wesley Kohlhoff.
Wesley Kohlhoff?
Kohlhoff, that's Pedder saying of it.
That is the correct answer, yes. That is on the list. 2020.
Kim. This is stressful.
Yeah. David Marrero.
Oh, I thought that was the hardest one on the list, but that is a correct answer. You do know your Spanish doubles, men's doubles partners, don't you?
I am on the struggle bus here. I'm going to go Henry Kontinen.
Correct. Yes, Kontinen on the list.
He's won it a couple of times. That's what I'm only confident on that now. That's me done.
Right, I'm a bit stuck now. What's his face? Mate Pavic. Surely they've got one.
Incorrect, Kim. No, Mate Pavic's not on the list. Chris wins it.
Oh, Chris, my goodness.
Chris wins this week.
You ran out of Spaniards, Kim. That's all that happened.
Surprisingly, Mate Pavic not on the list. Any were there any other answers people were thinking of?
I was going to go Daniel Nesta next.
That's yes, old, you could I have think. Said Danny Nesta right. back in 2010 and 2011 they with different partners.
They play until their 40s, don't they?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I literally have no one else.
I was thinking of Bruno Suarez, but I wasn't sure. Because I don't think Jamie Murray's won it, so it wouldn't have been with him. John Peers, has he won it?
Yes, you could have had John Peers with Henry Kontinen.
I should have got that one.
If you had said Suarez, that was an incorrect answer. You couldn't have given me Mate Pavic. Zimunic, yes, one of Danny Nesta's partners. Max Meunier was another answer you could have given me. Nikola Mektić played with Wesley Kuhlhoff to win in 2020. And the two answers you haven't given me, which is actually a pair that won in 2015, it is Roger and Takao.
Oh, yes, of course. There are many others.
Yes.
Those
were all your players. Aber, Mahou, Kuhlhoff, Mektić, the Bryan brothers, Jack Sock, Kontinen, Piers, Royer, Takao, Marrero, Verdasco, Granolas, Lopez, Meunier, Nesta, and Zimunic. So
I remember those 2 years in a row where it was Spanish domination. Mm. It was great.
Well, Kontinen Piers, Chris, you were right. Kontinen Piers did do the double 2016, 2017. So that was some good knowledge. And I was sort of backing Kim. I feel like maybe, Kim, you should have kept the more niche Spanish answers.
I think, I think you should have. If when I said Mahou, you should have gone for the partner, Hugh Hubert, just to cut me off.
Yeah, but I suppose,
we're not tactical at this, are we? Let's be honest.
No.
If we get an answer, we're just happy.
It's the pressure. The pressure.
Well done, all. Well done, all.
Right, moving on to the mailbag. We've got a question from Marie Richards on Twitter. Thank you very much, Marie. Marie's asked us, apart from Andy Murray, who has the presence of the big three or two affected the most? Would Djokovic be this good if it wasn't for Federer and Nadal? Would he have more or less than 21 slams and ditto for Federer and Nadal? Great question. Very, very good. Very apt. What do you both think? Who else has been impacted the most by the big three?
For me, Andy Roddick and David Ferrer probably spring to mind the most.
Okay.
Andy Roddick, obviously at Wimbledon. I feel like David Ferrer had a French Open.
Are you joking?
I think he had a French Open in him. If Rafa hadn't dominated, I think there were a few years David Ferrer was on the cusp, I think.
Kim, are you shocked by this? David Ferrer?
Well, I see Joel's point, but I mean, if Rafa hadn't have won the French, I think David Ferrer would still have lost to Djokovic.
Ooh. Yeah,
the French.
I just think he's
so I feel
tier two.
I think that's harsh. I think that's
harsh. What about Stan? Stan would have won more. Del Potro would have probably picked up some more before his injury. I think Roddick is so true because that final at Wimbledon, he would have definitely have had a Wimbledon title.
Painful.
Grigor Dimitrov or Monfils, Songa. Those sorts of players.
Songa might have got one. Yeah, Berdych might have got one. But who would you say was the most affected? You're going David Ferrer, are you? Or are you going Andy Roddick?
Maybe not most. Maybe not most affected. I mean, that was probably one that, just sort of sprung to mind. Most affected at the French Open.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Soddling.
Although Ferrer was... Yeah. Well, I mean, great question. And I think the other part of Marie's question, I think that they've all helped each other, haven't they? Because they've got... The bar has kept, being raised, and they've all had to work harder to keep up. And I think it wouldn't be the same if one of them was extracted out of that triangle. So yeah,
that does make sense. And it makes you think about next gen, doesn't it, Kim? Will the same happen with Holger, Musetti,
Carlos,
Felix? Will we have a big four, you know? And will they be better for it?
Let's hope so, because we want some good rivalries, don't we? So let's talk about the news from this last week. And that is the fact that, well, people are a bit annoyed, perhaps, about the ATP finals and the fact that Novak Djokovic has managed to get in because of his Wimbledon title, because they have the Grand Slam rule. Obviously, if you win a Grand Slam, you're automatically in to the ATP finals. But many people are arguing, well, hang on a minute, there were no ranking points on offer for that win because of the ban on Russian and Belarusian players. Yet, so Djokovic didn't get his 2,000 points. Yeah, he's still been able to get into Turin. Whereas Cameron Norrie, on the other hand, would have got 720 points for making the Wimbledon semifinals as he did. But he's not been helped in any way by going up into, you know, making the field in Turin. And he could have been there should those points have been added on. So yet Djokovic, by virtue of winning, despite then being no ranking points, is in the final. So I totally get Norrie's point with this. It is a bit weird. I hadn't actually thought about it until it was kind of raised. But what do you think? Do you think Grand Slam champions, regardless of if there are ranking points because of political decisions and what have you, do you think this is gravely unfair on someone like Cameron Norrie? Or do you think it's totally fair that Novak's there because he won a slam?
Well, I say
Or do you think it's because of Djokovic that people are moaning?
I think it might be. I think this one was, I think people took what Cam Norrie said and they took it out of context, because then they made it about him saying that Djokovic shouldn't be there, when he was just pointing out that it's weird that if the ranking points don't apply, that the title rule still does apply. Because if it's either not a ranking tournament, it has no affiliation with the ATP tour, or it is. And I think the blurred lines don't really make sense. And obviously with the WTA, they had no points and Rybakina was excluded from the WTA finals on those grounds. So there's, at least it's consistent, even if it does feel unjust for Rybakina. But I think with the Norrie piece, I think he was saying more, the points that he would have got would have put him higher up himself. So like, he wouldn't necessarily have qualified, and Djokovic did qualify by right in the end after his result in Paris. So he was in the top eight. But if he had got the 720 points, or I think it was 720, he would have gone above Holger Rune and been the first alternate to go, like he was previously. So it does have big paycheck implications and big ranking points implications if you do get in as an alternate. So it's essentially saying either it counted and it has some valid credentials in terms of counting towards the finals, or it doesn't. And so I think that was the point, rather that Djokovic shouldn't be there or it's made too much of an impact on him. It's just what it looks like. It's one rule for one player and another for the rest of the field, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's you can see why Norrie is frustrated. I think, there's sort of been like this added hysteria because it looks like Novak Djokovic has sort of benefited from it. But as you pointed out, Chris, what's amazing to me is the fact that he is qualified for the tour finals by right. We were talking about this rule, you know, a few weeks ago, and it's been on the tour for a long time. I think it's been on the tour for the last, you know, 20 odd years. But to me, it's amazing Djokovic has been able to qualify regardless, given how, you know, relative how little tennis he's played compared to some of the other players who are making up the field. But that inconsistency between, you know, what happens if you're a champion versus, you know, what happens if you make the semifinals feels completely unjust. And again, I think just ruins the integrity, I think, of taking ranking points off, you know, from Wimbledon. I think it wasn't thought out, I feel, to the complete end, and as a result, we're getting these kind of weird quirks that should have, I feel, been thought about maybe, you know, a while ago. So I don't know. Hopefully, I hope we just see Wimbledon ranking points back next season, because I think it'll just make everything a lot easier. I think this rule is interesting, but and I think I've said before that I quite like, you know, on the WTA side to have, you know, a Grand Slam player like, you know, Rybakina as a champion, have her moment at the end of the season, because, you know, I feel like she's become a little bit of a forgotten player. But yeah, I can sort of see both sides of the argument, particularly when you're Cam Norrie. And yeah, as you said, there are big paycheck implications. Also, are big implications for next season with the United Cup coming up based on rankings. It really does just throw up lots of different scenarios that I think don't need to be thought about if there is kind of more consistency and unity applied.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see what happens. But I think it does just, it's the inconsistency, which is the most, I guess, the thing that rankles for a lot of people, isn't it? Let's look at the next gen finals, though, because that is occurring. We've got Jack Draper there. Very
Jack
exciting.
Draper.
We have representation. It starts tomorrow in Milan. The red group. This is where we get the ridiculous colours for the groups, red and green. I mean, surely they can be
they
more
can do
exciting
better than that. Can't have the
really
Tennis
can.
Weekly group and the passing shot group.
Exactly. Now, well, why don't you raise that as a point? Get some contacts at the Billie Jean King Cup, and then we'll be in the next gen next year. Red group: Lorenzo Musetti, Jack Draper, Chunsin Sheng, and Dominic Stricker. And then green group: Brandon Nakashima, Yuri Lehechka, Francesco Pesaro, and Matteo Arnaldi. Not going to lie, I don't know an awful lot about the last two players there, apart from the fact they must be Italian. For me, I'm looking at Nakashima, and I think the red group's the tougher of the groups. Nakashima, Draper, and Musetti for me, I think. Stricker, what about you guys? Who have you got your eyes on?
You know what? I think this could be a great tournament for Jack Draper. I think... I think he could do really well. I also think, though, that the nature of this, the court they play on and the rules that they have means that it is pretty open. I think last year Carlos coming through is really impressive because there are quite a lot of distractions at this one. Like, I think the court, they've got rid of the doubles lines. It looks a lot smaller. It's almost a bit more of a trial event for trying out different things. So if you like your routines, you like to play on a court that looks like your regular court, you might be a bit thrown by it. So... I can see some upsets here because the format is obviously not full sets either. So
I've enjoyed that the kind of the promotional materials have really gone in on Holger Rune as kind of like the player who's going to be there. That's very, very exciting. But he's, of course, not in it, has gone to be first alternate in Turin. But yeah, for me, it could be Jack Draper's moment. It could be Lorenzo Musetti's moment. I mean, there are three Italians in the field, so I feel like maybe the odds are with the Italians. But
should we pick an Italian? That's three out
I
of eight,
Musetti,
right?
I think
that's one for each of us.
Yeah, let's all pick an Italian. I'm going to go for Pesaro.
I'll go for an Arnaldi.
Okay, you go for an Arnaldi.
You can have Musetti.
I'll have Musetti, yeah. well, yeah, we'll see. But I mean, we do have, as you said, we do have some rules in here, some new rules. We know it's a hotbed for innovation, the next gen finals. We've got quicker shot clock, so down from 25 to 15 seconds following an ace, double fault, or unreturned serve. What do we make of that? That is, you know, not one size fits all for every sort of point. They're showing some, trialing some flexibility there, aren't they, with the... with the timing.
Thank God Rafa's not there is all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope they don't have long points because one sit down per set, and I know they do shorter sets, but yeah, 15 seconds between a serve, one sit down per set. That does seem a bit brutal if it's going to be a long attritional match. So I guess they're hoping for fast action. but I guess maybe they're also trying to build the next gen to just get used to being quick so that when they become fully fledged on the, you know, the main tour, they're sort of used to having played at such speed. I don't know, but I don't think this you can't apply this in a Grand Slam, can you? So it has its relevance, and it doesn't at the same time.
It does make me think it's to do with scheduling issues. You know, they just haven't got enough court time, so they're like, quicker shot clock, one sit down per set. Let's get this done.
They're paying. Yeah, they're paying the sports centre by the hour for
exactly.
For the court,
it's £9 an hour.
I do think with the shot clock though, like if they're going to trial this for shortened points, i.e., ace, double fault, unreturned serve, then I feel like there does need to be some leeway for, well, if a rally goes longer than expected, then, you know, for me, I would, you know, add an extra 10 seconds to 35 seconds. I know that in seems counterintuitive to, you know, this it feeling that tennis should be fast and free flowing, and, you know, people's attention spans are like very short now. But I certainly feel like if they're going to try and bring in this more adaptive approach to the shot clock, then I feel like it needs to go both ways and not just, you know, short, just because, you know, we want to get it done as quick as possible.
Is it also because umpires don't actually call people on this stuff quite a lot? You know, I feel like if you try and bake it into the rules, then there's less emphasis on the umpires to obviously like make the decision there. But if you go to 35 seconds, Joel, I mean, add on another 60 and you're at a change of ends. We're getting, I think that would be, I think normally they do make allowances when a point has gone particularly long and people are particularly tired because they aren't trying to hold up the play. So I guess it's about the intention a little bit. But if both players aren't ready, then I've never seen both players get warned. It's only if one player is ready to play, right? And then the other one isn't. I think that's more where it comes from. But I mean, I love the innovation they've had at these things in the past and seeing new things be tried and let's see how it goes. I think it won't necessarily be on the tour next year, but let's see if it can be an exciting TV spectacle this year.
Yes, and from one exciting spectacle to another, you've got the Billie Jean King Cup Finals, which you're both at this week in Glasgow. Destination Glasgow, as it's been advertised. Tomorrow, it's opening off with Australia against Slovakia and then Kazakhstan, Great Britain in the afternoon session. How are you going to work this, guys? Are you going to pop into every session? Are you going to pick and choose? Are you going to just sort of loiter?
We're going to split up.
We're just going to follow Rebecca Marino wherever she goes. Yeah. We don't care about all the other matches going on.
Well, Rebecca Marino's not in action until Thursday. So
have we got some free time? There. Great, some free time. It's going to be
a good one
tomorrow. Yeah, it will be. We're looking forward to seeing hopefully the Wimbledon champion taking on Great Britain. They're obviously without Raducanu, who pulled out of the event. So that would be a bit of a
weekend. It's going to be hard. I feel like it's going to be hard for GB. I mean, like with the resources we have, in theory, we shouldn't necessarily be here. You know, we lost in the qualifying. It's going to be fascinating to me how they handled the pressure and expectation that, yes, they're playing a very high quality field. Yes, there have been players that have dropped out, but you know, we're not going to see Iga Świątek or Jessie Pegula here, for example. But having that high quality field against them in their own backyard, the pressure is on them to perform. I'm not necessarily saying that I'm expecting them to get out of their group and get to the semi-finals, but they need to be, I think, putting on a good showing and I think just showing everyone that women's tennis is not just in the UK that, you know, the Emma Raducanu circus about, you know, her coaching. Actually, there's a lot more strength and depth here. And this is, you know, you would say this is a very good opportunity for players like Harriet Dart, who, you know, I think's had a great season this year. But, you know, for me, he's gone a little bit under the radar because of, you know, the attention on Raducanu, Katie Balter as well, Heather Watson, Barnett and Nichols. It's a squad that I think, you know, will look at this as it's their opportunity. They will look at it as like it's their time to shine.
Do you think they'll have a good chance against Spain? That's sort of Paula Pedrosa sort of versus Great Britain. They might be able to pick up a doubles, maybe a double. That could be a doubles and a singles win, second singles potentially. What do we think?
I mean, any rubber I will, I'm not going to lie, any rubber I will take at the moment. Match by match, I just think it's going to be very hard from the first point, I think, for GB, given the, you know, the opponents they're facing.
I'm really looking for...
Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah.
A win is a win, isn't it?
Well, it's true. Anything is a win is a win, as you say. I'm looking forward to the Switzerland-Canada match. That will be good. That will have Andreescu will be there. Leila Fernandez will be there. Bencic and Teichmann. Yeah. That could be a pretty spicy one. But ask us your questions is what we need to make sure that we get through to you guys, because we are able to ask them any questions. So if you have a question for a team, a question for GB, for example, a question for the Wimbledon champion, let us know and we can try and ask that for you as part of the media accreditation that we have for the tournament.
I know, it's very exciting. I'm going to sleep tonight and think about all the questions I'm going to ask all the players. Yeah, we're going to be in the press room for. But in the meantime, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this latest tour catch-up with Tennis Weekly. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come. We are going to be doing daily coverage of the Billie Jean King Cup. Me and Chris will be doing some diary entries that will be going out daily whilst we are here. So fingers crossed, first one will be going up tomorrow evening. So make sure you subscribe to us to stay up to date on whatever device you listen to us on. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Tennis Weekly Pod. So do give us a like and a follow if you don't already. Follow us for any updates, especially on Twitter during the course of the week. And do let us know any questions for the mailbag, any comments or feedback as well. And you can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com if you prefer. And check out our website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back tomorrow from Glasgow at Tennis Weekly HQ. Myself and Chris will be primed and ready to talk about day one of the Billie Jean King Cup. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.